You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Comrades, this is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm happy, first of all, to kick off and wish everyone a happy All Saints Day in the Western tradition. And that's actually, we're going to be discussing some folk traditions and our Christian traditions and how that comes together. And of course, I hate to pick you as my token pagan for these interviews, Jason, but... folks absolutely love hearing you, so I thought I'd have you on. So Jason Augustus, as always, head propagandist for the Traditionalist Worker Party and the mind behind 14 Sacred Words, is with me today. Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Matt. Thank you for having me on All Saints Day.
Well, I'm happy to have you here. Let's talk about, we're going to start with a little bit of fun, because I think we have to have fun in this struggle. For Halloween, we had... something that was exciting, you know, something you don't have in New York. Pumpkin carving. Tell us a little bit about what it was like. I know this sounds silly, but it's such an important thing with community, because for me, when everyone's carving pumpkins and you're putting them out, you get to see your neighbors and the different pumpkins they carve, the kids are trick-or-treating, it really creates that strong sense of community, that everyone is engaged in the same activity that, of course, going back historically, we've been doing for a very long time in one shape or another during the Christian period, during the pre-Christian period. And it's a beautiful way to kind of bring everyone together. You know, old folks are out with their grandkids, parents are out with their kids, you're meeting new people. My son, we dressed up as a minion, because, you know, the left and the Jews love to say we're planning world domination. So, Nick, my son, was our resident minion to aid in that, for today. But what was it like kind of seeing the community? I think it's such an important thing to hit on, because so many of our listeners who message me, you know, a lot of them are from areas like this, but a lot are behind enemy lines in major metropolitan areas, very diverse areas, very alienated areas, and they don't have, I mean, it's not just Halloween, but really any shared cultural experiences. So kind of what was that to see? What were your takeaways?
Well, it was nice to be a part of it. I think that's the biggest thing, because in New York City, the Halloween tradition is still there in some sense, but there's ways that only those communities can get involved in it. The Dominicans, they can go trick-or-treating, they can do whatever it is, they can practice our folkish tradition, mm-hmm. Claim it as their own, go out and do it because it's safe for them. They don't have to worry about, hey, white boy! You know, they don't worry about that, so they can go door-to-door, they can go store-to-store, and go trick-or-treating. They can hang out in the front of the apartments and carve pumpkins with one another, you know, on their dirty chairs playing checkers. I can't do that because this is not my community. So all I can do is kind of either, I got one of two options. I can go out and take the risk of, you know, getting assaulted because, you know, it's, you know, people are getting drunk out there and beating up white boys. Or I can stay inside and watch it from a healthy distance.
Either way, you're never really a part of it.
No, I'm never a part of it. I haven't been a part of it since I was very, very little and lived in slightly a better area than I did most of my life. So being here was a lot, obviously, better because I got to partake in the pumpkin carving. I got to see people like myself going around trick-or-treating, families trick-or-treating. And I felt like I was a part of it. You know, I didn't feel completely alienated from it.
Well, and that's such an important thing, because that alienation is just, it's the killer of your spirit. It's the killer of your morale. And being able to have those community things where you don't even talk politics. It wasn't about politics. It wasn't about, you know, arguing religious denominations or things like that. It's a shared community experience where everyone has the same folkish traditions. It's homogenous, and everybody gets to be a part of it. And I think that's an important thing. Our politics are so important. You know, to me, my faith is so important. I know your faith is important to you. But another thing is just to realize that within the folkish community, the Volksgemeinschaft, of course, if we're going to go into the German terms that we all know and love, it's so important to have those traditions, because traditions are what bond people together. It's what, even if you are kind of isolated, you know, if you're tired, I mean, especially coming from a working class area, you work hard, you come home, and then you get to see the joy on your kid's face, and you get to see other people, and it really brings you together. It gave an experience for us to be able to talk and meet with our neighbors, and it's really a beautiful, organic thing. And that's why, you know, something that we want to talk about Christmas now. We haven't even had Thanksgiving, so we're not going to start playing Christmas music just yet here in the Daily Traditionalist. But you were talking about how you're excited about Christmas, being able to say Merry Christmas and have an actual tree. And, of course, around here we go out and we cut our own trees. And there's a whole thing where, you know, you decorate together and, you know, you see your neighbors again. You go out and you cut trees and you see them. And it's a really beautiful thing. And you don't have that in the major metropolitan areas and in a lot of capacities. And to me, it's so important because the Jewish war on Christmas, the Jewish war on our folk traditions and things like that, of course, I believe that there is a religious purpose they're doing it, but it's also a social cohesion thing. Because the Christmas spirit, for instance, you know, I believe keeping Christ in Christmas, as Charlie Brown would tell us, you know, during their annual Christmas special for the Peanuts. But for those who are pagans, for those who are not religious, that Christmas spirit of folkishness, of unity, of love for one another, and of celebration, that's applicable to everybody. And the Jews aren't just trying to take Christ out of Christmas. They're trying to take Christmas out of Christmas. They're trying to turn it into a generic holiday. I saw the other 98% or whatever, that trash page on Facebook that social justice warriors absolutely love and adore, saying, we say happy holidays because there's like 30 different religious traditions within this period. So, you know, you be respectful.
Yeah, be inclusive. Just exclude these guys.
Yeah, just exclude anything that has anything to do with Europeans, essentially. So, you know, what impact do you think that's going to have on you, on your family? I mean, on the fact that, like, with Halloween, but then also with Christmas and also Thanksgiving. Also, you know, because Thanksgiving is an exploitative, white supremacist, genocidal holiday. Or so I've heard from the forces of social justice, the political correctness commissars. What's that like? What are you looking forward to with being able to celebrate all these holidays in a much healthier, homogenous environment?
I think the bottom line behind getting all of these holidays back, so to speak, is to be able to celebrate them openly. You know, you take the gays out of the closet and you stick the normal people in it. Because my family has always tried, we've strived to celebrate our folkish traditions, but in a very enclosed, encapsulated way, away from our community. And that really takes away a very big aspect of the tradition itself, because this is supposed to be a communal thing. Mm-hmm. So when you're bogged down and, you know, behind a door that has 30 bolt locks on it, it really takes away a lot of the spirit from it, and it makes it feel almost like, I mean, we know we're not doing anything wrong, but it feels like we're doing something that we probably shouldn't be doing, or, you know, that we're holding on to ashes.
Well, they make it seem shameful. I mean, Thanksgiving, of course, coming up this month, and I love Thanksgiving. Insert Eric Heimbach's fat joke right here, but... But, you know, I love Thanksgiving because it's a time to be able to bring everyone together. And for us here in the TWP, I mean, it's something we've talked about before, but, you know, everyone knows that I'm isolated from, you know, the family I grew up with because of my politics. And that's fine because I'm fighting for them. And I know many comrades have gone through a similar struggle, but we're going to be celebrating. There's a whole lot of comrades, some of them who are here, who are going to Indiana University and other schools that can't travel home for the holidays. Those of us who are here now, we're going to hold Thanksgiving together. So we're going to be able to have a TWP Thanksgiving. And we are family. You know, all of our nationalist principles of faith and family and folk and loving one another and treating each other like an extended family, we're going to do that ourselves and have a very happy nationalist Thanksgiving. So, you know, to me, that's so important because that bonds us together. People are already talking about what they're going to bring and what family recipes they have that they're going to come and share with us. And, I mean, that to me makes it so beautiful. And this is what we're fighting for. We're fighting to get back to normal, where normal is just having a community, people that you love you, people that you can trust, people that you're loyal to, and, you know, by making our holidays shameful. I mean, like Thanksgiving, honestly saying that Thanksgiving, you know, should be taken away just like they're trying to take away Columbus Day. You know, these SJWs, these radical anti-white leftists are saying you shouldn't celebrate Thanksgiving because it's white supremacist, it's imperialist, all these things. And what they're really saying is they don't want white people to have community. They don't want us to have events where we come together, celebrate loving one another. I mean, it's again, nationalism is about love, while the anti-whites, where these leftists, these globalists, are about hate. They want to destroy. What they're trying to destroy is our sense of community. And really, what do you think on that, on the importance of these traditions where we get to celebrate together?
Well, I think the reason that they're trying to stomp out all of our traditions and our communal things specifically is because when you get together and you realize that you love all the same things, you are, you know, you're enjoying the same things, and you're having that you know, you're in good spirits and you're with your community doing it. You're with your own people doing it. You begin to realize what your best interests are, and they start to boggle around in your brain. And you might start thinking something crazy, like maybe maintaining these things or defending them against foreign entities that try to attack them.
Yeah.
So that's why I think that they're trying to just kind of snip all these things away. They're trying to take the community aspect out of it for our people, because the last thing they want is us getting along with one another. The last thing they want is us celebrating our folkish traditions with one another, because that's going to get the gears turning in that maybe we should probably be defending this.
Yeah, and there's values and customs that we share that bring us together, that bond us together, not only by blood, but by culture. And, you know, another thing, of course, we deal with religious division in the nationalist cause all the time, not in the TWP, but you do see it, especially online, when people have that degree of anonymity. There's a lot of back and forth sometimes, but, you know, for me, to be able to see it, you know, for instance, like, you know, we've got a fire pit here, which is a great time to be able to sit around and talk about, and building a fire, which is traditionally, you know, the Celts and the Gaelic tradition of on the October 31st, building a fire, which, of course, in folk tradition is said to keep away evil spirits. And that's, you know, what some say when it comes to the jack-o'-lantern, lighting the fire is to represent, but it's also a Christian tradition. So, you know, what did you think on that yesterday we did, and, you know, I say as a Christian who loves and respects my folkish brothers and sisters, that we get to celebrate both, and I'm not compromising my faith, and you're not compromising your faith, and it's just a beautiful time to come together as Europeans, and whatever specific things we do, you know, to be able to honor, you know, our religious traditions, they kind of come together in a beautiful community way. What do you think on that, when it comes to, you know, being able to co-celebrate things together without compromising or sacrificing our individual, you know, belief systems, but coming together as a community?
Well, when you were carving the pumpkins and talking about lighting them and, you know, perhaps burn that nastiness we have in the bushes, you know, it was probably a pragmatic sense, but it was, you know, I did have my eyebrow raised sort of on, like, aren't you Christian? This is pagan stuff that we're doing here, but I think it goes back to, like, earlier ways in which pagans and Christians actually got along, as opposed to, like, the 1970s narrative of Christians coming in and killing all the pagans. I mean, these are such broad blanket statements because of all the divisions of both paganism and Christianity, that it's really a disingenuous thing to say that pagans and Christians don't have any possibility of coexistence, because there's no such thing as just a pagan. There's no such thing as just a Christian. There's, you know, there are different denominations, you know, and there are the original people who practiced these traditions.
Well, and, you know, to me, it really strikes, of course, my wife was raised Seventh-day Adventist, so her grandfather, God bless him, absolutely hates Halloween and basically any tradition, you know, because it's pagan. So I'm a pagan for having icons and maintaining a 2,000-year rich Christian heritage and tradition. And of course, there are some on the internet that would say to you, "What are you doing, sitting co-celebrating folkish events with you know, with a Christian? How dare you do that, Jason?" And when it comes to community, and this is what we're talking about why maintaining our traditions are so important. Again, it's not about compromising. You know, I wasn't invoking any pagan deities or anything like that. I wasn't dancing around the fire. You know, white people can dance. Take a look at ballet and classical dance, all that stuff. But this white boy definitely can't dance. That's the Lord's truth. But, you know, being able to maintain this fire of tradition, and everyone forgets, especially it's due, I think, to the Puritans, of course, the radical. It was also Reformation Day yesterday. And, you know, you see with Puritans and stuff that they have this narrative that anything folkish is evil. And that's just not in line with Christianity. You know, when the initial, you know, Christian monastics and priests went out, you know, talking about Christianity, conversion through discussion, conversion through talking, and showing that they believed, and I believe it is, the truth, the fulfillment, you know, of our folkish traditions, you know, they were told by their bishops, anything that doesn't directly contradict Christian doctrine, that's a folkish tradition, maintain it. That's why we have, even in some places still, like dancing around the maypole. That was done in the pre-Christian period. It's done during the Christian period. Now we're in this very bizarre, horrific 71-year hell spiral of Jewish control. But we still maintain our traditions, and maintaining our traditions are what bonds us together, whether you're Christian or pagan, maybe you're agnostic, but you get to know and love your customs and our expressions to, you know, the changing of the seasons, bringing everyone together for feasts and good times and celebrating together, I think is such an important thing as to there is no conflict between us. We can disagree on theological matters. That doesn't have anything to do with the fact that we believe in bringing the community together to love one another. And that's the principle, I think, no matter what your religious tradition is, anything but Judaism, pretty much, is built on love. And, you know, again, not dismissing our theological differences, but loving my pagan brothers and sisters, loving my Christian brothers and sisters of different denominations, that to me is such a beautiful thing, because it's that pure love that really is true love, you know, where you're not there trying to force your ideas on other people, you're just loving one another and celebrating together, and I think that's a spirit we need to encourage.
When you were talking about conversion through discussion, I think that's where a lot of pagans kind of stumble, and they'll kind of try to disagree with you on that one, whereas conversion was done by the sword. Whereas your Christianity, your particular, and I can't speak for all Christians, just as I can't speak for all pagans, but I'm only speaking as...
You weren't elected Pope of the pagans?
I'm not Pope of the pagans. It's as a pagan, it's my firm belief that all ideas, they merit discussion. Mm. And Christianity is one of those ideas. That's why we talk about religion constantly.
Yeah.
And I don't feel as though you have ever imposed your beliefs on me by the sword, even if verbally. So it's really important that we have these traditions, like you said, that create the dialogue, that keep the conversation going. And if any pagan should ever feel inclined to convert through things like that, then that would be that pagan's decision. Mm-hmm. But it's not forced, and nothing is compromised as far as our traditions, our practices. Nothing is lost.
Yeah. Well, and that's a very important thing. And of course, you know, as a Christian, conversion is a sincere thing. It can't be done. You cannot force conversion versus, you know, especially in Sunni Islam with the Wahhabis that we all know, backed by Israel, backed by Israel's state, Saudi Arabia. Their entire thing in the Middle East is, you know, Islam means to submit. The Shias, I know Shias, they wouldn't forcibly convert anybody. They're good folks. They get along with the Christians and the pagans in the Middle East. You know, the Zoroastrians, the Yazidis, other peoples, they coexist. But of course, Judaism, whenever it's introduced, forces these ideas, and Wahhabism really is this Jewish caricature of Islam, you know, through supporting the state religion of Saudi Arabia. And the Wahhabis don't care what your actual views are, what your actual beliefs are, what your actual religion is. They just put a gun to your head and say, submit. And that to them is conversion. But to understand as a Christian or as a pagan that these ideas of your religion have to be sincere. They have to be heartfelt. It's not something about just going along to get along. It's about your actual views. And that way, the idea of ever forcibly converting someone absolutely makes no sense, because that's not a conversion. You can wear you can put lipstick on a pig, but it doesn't make it a girl you want to take to prom. And that's what forcible conversion is.
Yeah, and that circles back to what we were talking about earlier about my family having to kind of, you know, put the bolts on the doors and lock it down just to celebrate our traditions on our own. Although the Dominicans may have been outside trying to trick-or-treat, it wasn't the way we do it. And the way that they practice it, it wasn't our traditions. But what that effectively was saying, if we didn't do things the way that they're doing, if we're not like them, so to speak, in a theoretical way, that we can't partake in any of this. It's a kind of ostracism. That's a forced conversion or conformity, I should say, rather.
Yeah, to multiculturalism.
Yeah, and if you refuse to do it, the only thing you're making us do is still practice our own thing,
yeah.
You know, with our own family. We won't, it can't be forced.
Yeah.
It just, it can't be forced. It's a personal decision.
Nor should it be forced.
No. And there's absolutely no reason for it to be, because we are able to have a dialogue. We're able to talk about these things.
Well, it's bringing people together, and this actually goes into the last third of the show. I want to talk a little bit about the work that you've been doing, that I've been doing. Jeff Scoop, who is, of course, on our show on Friday, is doing. Lots of folks, as we're getting ready for this event that is happening this weekend in Harrisburg. And a shout-out to Central PA Antifa that listened to my show on Friday. I'm sure they'll be listening in all week to try and get some juicy tidbits, so we'll see about that. Hope you enjoy the show. Hope you get converted again, not forcibly, but through changing your heart and your spirit away from being a tool of the Jewish paymasters, and instead actually fighting for the interests of the working class. But, talking about the Nationalist Front, which, of course, is the idea of bringing, once and for all, under a professional banner, white nationalist organizations. And you've been doing a lot of work on the graphics for the new website. You know, we've been writing, we've been coding, doing it all ourselves. We want something done, do it yourself. So let's talk a little bit about the style of what people in the next couple days, right before the rally, the website's going to go live. Talk a little bit about your background, of course, in the corporate world and what's influenced you and how to be able, we're not looking for factionalism with the Nationalist Front. We want it to be open to any white nationalist that believes these principles of a legal political struggle, where we're going to be able to create a homeland for our people. And that means, even stuff that we like personally in the TWP, not giving in to 100% our graphics, because it has to be for everyone. It's not about ego, not about group, it's about unity. So let's talk a little bit about what you've been designing.
Well, what I've been designing is more or less the things, at least visually, the things that we all do agree on, the things that we would all like to see, as opposed to what we individually have going for us visually. Yeah. I tried to steer away from any one particular group's aesthetic, even the Traditionalist Worker Party. I try to steer away from our aesthetic. It's just what we actually do share in common that I'm trying to represent in a non-factional way, but still in a strong way and in a forward motion way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, we're going to have on the top banner when you go to the homepage of the Nationalist Front with the logo. Thank you again so much for designing that. It looks amazing. But getting the 14 words, we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. That's a principle that if you believe in these words, that the idea that what you're doing, this isn't about subculture, it's not about ego, it's not about you, it's not even about your group. It's about being able to secure the existence of your people, which is Europeans, and a future for your children, for my children, for everybody's children, to be able to have a better, brighter, safer existence where our heritage, our culture, our blood, our language, all of that will be able to live on in peace with the rest of the world, but it'll be able to live on in our own homeland. And when you really break it down, I always believe in KISS, keep it simple, stupid, that we can agree on the 14 words, then everything else falls into place. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's fair to say I totally agree, and I definitely wouldn't have named my first musical project 14 Sacred Words if I didn't, because when it's like you said, when you all boil it down to it, you take theology aside, political affiliations, all of this stuff, that absolutely is important. What really is important is simply just those 14 words.
Yeah. Well, it makes us understand that factionalism doesn't win. And unfortunately, we've seen just in the past week or so, there has been some grumbling, some factionalism in different parts of the internet. You just see that. It always happens. But that does not stop our mission. It does not change our mission. And I just think it's unfortunate where people are sometimes working in a framework that has failed previously, of thinking you can go it alone. We need to be able to understand that, we as white nationalists, we are the vanguard of the best interests of our people, and the captain doesn't care about himself. He cares about taking care of his ship because he has a responsibility, and we all are captains of our ship to be able to make sure that our people get to a safe harbor. So anything that you think that might divide us, And then the people, when it comes to rhetoric, that are hurting our folk. I mean, an example where some people absolutely love to shoot their mouths off, encouraging violence, encouraging illegal activity, stuff like that. They're either feds or they're captains of the ship that are trying to drive their ship into the rocks. They're trying to sink their own ship, and that is counterproductive. But if, you know, we as nationalists can bring all these groups, organizations, and individuals together under the banner of the Nationalist Front, where no one is in charge insofar as ordering groups around, every group maintains its sovereignty, but we're agreeing on principles, we're agreeing on objectives, and we're looking at the chart in front of us. This is pragmatic politics, understand how politics works nationally and internationally, and that is the chart that a captain would look at to guide his ship. And if we can agree that this is the right way, we're not going to go off into the Bermuda Triangle, well, you know, of the old failed movement tactics, we're not going to bash ourselves into the rocks and sink our ship through, basically counterproductive behavior in every capacity, we're all on the same path, and we're going to guide our ship to the safe harbor. We see the lighthouse, you know, we're going to dock it, and then everyone's going to get off happy, we're going to have a party, which is the survival of our people, the 14 words. That, to me, is so important. What's your takeaway on that?
It's a lot like, it's like Inception nationalism. You're using nationalism to bond together nationalism. because each group that's involved in the Nationalist Front maintains their sovereignty, self-determination, everything that's in nationalism, but, we all come together in the interest of the 14 words. So this is nationalism within nationalism within nationalism.
How deep does it go? Well, and, you know, the things for folks who have been able to see the proposed constitution of the Nationalist Front, our guiding principles, what we talk about is, of course, the way forward is going to be the creation of a white ethnostate on the North American continent, working with other nationalist groups, both in Europe and around the world, even in America, of different heritages, to be able to bring the American empire, this failed multicultural experiment, to an end, a peaceful end, to be able to give everyone self-determination, everyone sovereignty. But one of the things, you know, because there's a lot of debate and discussion on, you know, basically what it ends up debating, how many angels can fit on the head of a pin, about economic policy or things like that of the state we haven't built yet. So one of the things that we have in the document is believing, you know, the Articles of Confederation had that each state essentially would be sovereign within a greater collective. In a white ethnostate, we can have separate mini-states that are going to be governed, whether you're a monarchist, whether you believe in a republican form of government with limited franchise, as our founders envision, whether you're a national socialist, whether you're a fascist that isn't a national socialist. We have the ability to be able to say, look, we, from the very beginning, will work together with you and to be able to give you and your vision its own home. There's enough space in this country for us all to work together, but to be able to get there, we need to come together. How do you think that might kind of end the division? Because arguing over tax policy on the state that doesn't exist yet, it seems a little foolish to me, but people do engage in that and consider that factionalism enough to not work with a group.
Right. I think it's the same thing that keeps people involved in mainstream politics, listening to, this lady with her mullet yapping about, college funds and all of this when, half of us are just working class, afraid to leave the house in a lot of the major cities, mm-hmm. and the ones here in the rural areas aren't making enough money to pick up the next loaf of bread. So even in contemporary America, a lot of us really aren't too concerned about any of these issues, mm-hmm. and certainly about, whatever is going on in the Middle East. Most of us really don't care.
Yeah.
So it really, it's about just taking care of our families. It's taking care of our communities. That's what we're concerned about, and that's what the Nationalist Front is. It's making sure that we can all take care of ourselves, and then let's talk about this stuff. There are absolutely things that need to be spoken about. I'm not belittling the importance of these subjects, but at this particular time, our survival, our existence is that's what's up for discussion right now with these people that are trying to kill us. And to us, that's not a discussion.
Yeah.
To us, that's not something we're talking about.
Well, I mean, you're so right. We need to be able to win this battle and then acknowledge that there are going to be discussions. There's going to be compromises in the future. But what we need is a home for our people. We need to build that home. Independence and sovereignty, of course, need to be the words on everyone's lips. and unity. Unity on shared principles. Again, not unity with organizations or individuals that want to crash us into the rocks, but folks that have the same vision of what we're building. That's where unity comes, where we can put aside our differences, we can love and respect one another and work together in sacrifice. And that's why, again, I'm encouraging everyone who can join us in Harrisburg this weekend. It's going to be a really exciting time, and it doesn't stop in Harrisburg. It starts in Harrisburg, and we're going to be building. There's a lot of events coming up. We're going to be holding an event to defend Lee Jackson Day in Virginia, along with groups like the League of the South in January. There's a lot of things going on in Texas, as Chris told us just yesterday on the show. Things happening all over the country, but we need to come together, need to love and respect one another, and you know, that's what the Nationalist Front provides, this framework to be able to work together. So, Jason, give me a final thought to send us off for the rest of the day.
Final thought is, it's not all about how intelligent you are. It's not about how theologically versed you are. It's really not about any of that. You could be a genius. You could be semi-smart. Or you could just be a guy who doesn't want to die like me. Just get involved.
Exactly. Always get involved. Tomorrow is always too late. And comrades, things are exciting. Things are moving. Remember that movements move. And that's what we're doing. So stay tuned. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of The Daily Traditionalist. So great to be here with another edition of our show, and I look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow. So thank you for joining us, Jason. To all my Christian brothers and sisters, happy All Saints Day. Say a prayer for all of our fallen, all of our families, all of our martyrs. Say a prayer for their souls, and I look forward to being here tomorrow. Have a great day. Hail victory.
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.